Briefly, I suggest that some of the first generation contactees, including Adamski, were involved in a cultural influence experiment orchestrated by a group of benevolent alien visitors from somewhere in our multiverse. This of course makes me a heretic among heretics in the ufological community. But I have reached a similar conclusion regarding Adamski as Dr. Bertolt Schwartz mentioned to me in a letter after his investigation of contactee Howard Menger. The contact claims and case of Howard Menger is far from being an open and shut or black and white matter. To be fair and intellectually honest, I must of course also state that my theory may be wrong. George Adamski. A Critical Appraisal of George Adamski is a very important book that should be read by all serious ufologists. It is the result of years of research and presents a multitude of new data on Adamski, including an appendix with many interesting documents and a bibliography. But I would suggest readers compare this volume with George Adamski, The Untold Story, 1983, by Lou Zinstag and Timothy Good plus George Adamski. The Toughest Job in the World, 2010, by New Zealand journalist and ufologist Tony Brunt. In 15 chapters, Hallett documents his involvement with the Adamski movement, his defection after discovering indications that the Road of Defer film of 1965 was manipulated, and his resulting detailed investigation of the photographs, films and claims of George Adamski. And Hallett is very sharp in his assessment. Adamski was a simple fraud and con man who raised the lie to the level of an art. There are no question marks in Hallett's book, no doubts, no ambiguities, all is black and white. Adamski was a liar. And this is what I find the greatest flaw or problem with this book. Hallett frequently fails to mention facts and data that support a different interpretation. All who have seriously studied Adamski realize he was a mystic and very unreliable in much of what he said, a Janus man. Even Tony Brunt, who makes a different assessment of Adamski, writes in his biography, "He seemed to be half holy man, half huckster, a fascinating blend of the sublime and the slippery. Adamski was two of a kind." Much of the book is devoted to elaborate critical studies of the Adamski films and photographs. As my technical expertise in this field is practically nil, I refrain from comments on this issue. Personally, I hope that Glenn Steckling of the Adamski Foundation, who is the custodian of the original negatives, will let these be professionally examined and the result presented to the public. One interesting fact is that Adamski was not the first to illustrate the Venusian scout craft. This was instead presented in a booklet, Visitors from Space, by contactee Eugene Drake in 1949 or 1950. On page 127, Hallett mentions the observation of a scout craft and crew made by Lucy McGuinness alone, not together with Adamski. According to Hallett, McGuinness thought she saw the Venusian saucer up close, and that the observation was probably a dream. This gives a totally misleading picture of what actually happened. I received the transcript of Timothy Good's interview with McGuinness in 1979. From this, it is evident that Lucy was wide awake and stood outside the house in Palermo, where she at close range observed a translucent craft with human-looking crew. Lucy McGuinness had left as Adamski's secretary in 1962 when she couldn't stand more of his wild claims and behavior. When Timothy Good asked why she didn't reveal the truth about Adamski's many claims, she gave a very interesting answer: "It never bothered me to the extent that I made an issue of it, because, you see, I could have made an issue of it, if I hadn't seen those ships." There have been many observations made of the Adamski type craft in various countries, also in Sweden. And not only by Adamski devotees. I personally investigated one such observation made by a bus driver in 1969. He only reported his close encounter to the Swedish military. British ufologist Jenny Randalls also mentioned such cases in one of her books. And I have still not found any evidence of fraud regarding the photos taken by Tehalitha Fry in Oregon, November, 1968. A FOIA in possession of the letters she wrote to her Swedish friend Edith Nielsen shortly after the incident. So even if Adamski did fake his pictures, these type of craft obviously exist. As to the Rofer film of 1965, was Madeline simply lying when she in great detail told of the encounter and the three mysterious individuals that came to her home minutes before the craft appeared and told them to get ready? Tony Brunt interviewed Madeline in May 2009 and she said of these men, "They could have been your uncle, or your cousin, or you. I got the impression their role was a supportive one. To be sure, we both held up under the excitement of the occasion." Hallett speculates that Adamski could have hypnotized Madeline to see the craft. Not a very likely explanation. Omitted in Hallett's biography is also Desmond Leslie's observation in 1954, together with Adamski, of a small observation disc very close. Carol Honey was an Adamski co-worker in the 1950s and 60s before he became disillusioned with the very extravagant tales and lies Adamski produced in the end of his career. Mark Hallett corresponded with Honey during his last years and they developed a sincere friendship. Intellectually honest is Hallett's assessment of Carol Honey. But I think it would have been appropriate by Hallett to also mention that Honey was a contactee himself, which he mentioned sometimes in his newsletters. "I have had personal experiences myself which proved a lot of things to me, but I will not make them available to a skeptical public." March, 1968. "I have met one highly evolved space person who had a bad scar, so on this point I speak from personal experience." June, 1963. According to Hallett, Desmond Leslie knew that Adamski was a crank. No doubt, when he realized that Adamski was a rogue, he was not really offended. Maybe he was even greatly amused by that revelation, laughed at it with its perpetrator, and decided to carry the joke further. This speculation has no basis in fact and is a complete misunderstanding of Desmond Leslie, his philosophy and his personality. Desmond Leslie defended Adamski all his life, but he was an esotericist and interpreted Adamski's experiences according to the esoteric tradition. Desmond Leslie and George Adamski. In my personal investigations of contact cases in Sweden, I have found independent witness confirmation that the contactee really did meet some type of strangers, whoever they are. We find this also in the Adamski case. Luzenstag mentioned that when Adamski stayed in a hotel in Basel in 1959, he was now and then visited by his contacts. Lou decided to check on this and asked the hotel manager and the porter. Both men answered, "There are several men who come at 9 o'clock, but never more than two at a time." Mark Hallett's comment on this fascinating information is only a derogatory speculation that Adamski was having secret homosexual meetings. To my knowledge, there are no facts supporting such a hypothesis. With these critical notes, I find it important to reiterate that I appreciate Mark Hallett's book very much. It is an important contribution to our understanding of George Adamski. I am not defending Adamski in the usual sense, but my theory is that he, as some other early contactees, were involved in an experiment that they often didn't really understand themselves. And in common with Carol Honey, I find the philosophy presented in Inside the Spaceships beautiful and inspiring. I believe the last word on Adamski has still not been written. There is a deeper mystery in the contactee enigma that needs further research. In this controversial field, I find it necessary to keep an open mind as well as be critical of critics and skeptical of skeptics. The George Adamski correspondence. Today arrived the long-awaited new book by my old friend and UFO colleague Timothy Good. Earth, An Alien Enterprise is a 466-page tome published by Pegasus Books, New York. Of special interest to me are the many chapters documenting physical contact cases from all over the world. In this respect, the book is a sequel to Alien Base, published in 1998. Chapter 11, The Overlords, in Timothy's latest book, is a summary of the complicated Swedish contact case of Richard Hoglund, documented in my book, Aliens on Earth. UFO Contacts in Sweden. I gave Timothy permission to use the data from my own investigations because this case is very intriguing and should be of interest to ufologists worldwide. I have been corresponding with Timothy Good since 1984, when his first book, George Adamski, The Untold Story, was published, co-authored with Adamski's former Swiss representative Ems Luzinstag. What I wrote in 1984 in my review is unfortunately true even today. For several years I have experienced a growing frustration over the fact that so few of the old contactees have been investigated and their experiences documented. It is a peculiar fact that the only thorough documentations of the most well-known and controversial UFO contactee of all times, George Adamski, has been made by an Englishman, Timothy Good, and a New Zealander, Tony Brunt. Book name is, George Adamski. The Toughest Job in the World. Where are the American ufologists and biographers? Based on my own investigations of Swedish physical contact cases of the Nordic alien variety, I believe we need to take a second look at the classic contactees of the 1950s, George Adamski, Daniel Fry, Orfeo Angelosi, George Van Tassel, Howard Menger et al. They obviously were in contact with some individuals who claimed to be extraterrestrial. But there are other options and possibilities than Venusians. I have mentioned this problem in several earlier blog entries and for many years suggested an alternative working hypothesis based on Jacques Vallée's esoteric intervention theory. What is needed in contactee research is competent, critical but open-minded ufologists, neither naive believers nor reductionist debunkers. Academic scholars, authors and journalists are aware of the extreme importance of private correspondence when writing theses and biographies. Searching for and collecting correspondence has been something of a priority at AFU. And we are fortunate to have received files and correspondence including many of the early contactees. This week I also discovered we had a copy of the Adamski documents. 1. Published by Gray Barker in 1980, donated by Hillary Evans. This is a collection of various Adamski correspondence from 1957 to 1965. In the 1980s I received, from Lucius Farish, a copy of a very unique correspondence between George Adamski and Miss Emma Martinelli. The letters were written between August 16, 1950 and May 8, 1952, that is before the famous contact in the California desert November 20, 1952. Emma Martinelli was a member of the San Francisco Interplanetary Club and knew Adamski from 1949 until his death in 1965. In these letters Adamski reveals some very interesting facts regarding his first science fiction book Pioneers of Space, published in 1949. Speaking of visitors from other planets, you see, in the physical I have not contacted any of them. But since you have read Pioneers of Space you can see how I get my information about these people and their homelands. January 16, 1952. In an earlier letter he presented this explanation. In this letter I have explained, using illustrations, how one may venture from one place to another, while his physical is one place and he is in another. That is the way I have written this book. I actually have gone to the places I speak of. I actually have talked to the ones I speak of. To you I can reveal this since your letter reveals much, while to others I keep silent about this. August 16, 1950. This is very interesting data as Adamski later was very much against any form of psychic communication with space people and strongly objected to the esoteric interpretation of his physical contacts given by Mead Lane and Riley Crabb of Borderland Sciences Research Association. BSRA. They regarded the craft and space people as belonging to the etheric world, normally invisible to us. In the Adamski documents. 1. There is a letter where Adamski gives this view of the problem. In reference to Riley Crabb we have met several years ago. I do not support his esoteric views for if the teachings had been correct we would not be in the trouble that we are today. I feel that his research is based on the psychic and his little bearing on the present-day events. December 11, 1962. This is a rather contradictory statement comparing his earlier explanations. Riley Crabb was a theosophist and the space people teachings given by Adamski in Inside the Spaceships are basically identical to theosophy so his criticism of Riley Crabb sort of missed the point. In several of these early Martinelli letters, Adamski mentioned that he has written another book on saucers and spaceships and that his manuscript is now in the hands of Henry Holt Company. This was told in a letter of November 24, 1951. I have never heard of this manuscript, but if it could be found, we may get many more clues to the George Adamski enigma. The enigmatic Carol Honey. The American ufologist and contactee Carol Honey, 1928-2007, is today largely forgotten in the annals of UFO history. He was an aerospace engineer and accomplished hypnotist who for 7 years was George Adamski's right-hand man. But he also claimed personal physical contact and close cooperation with a group of space people secretly operating behind the scenes. Unfortunately, very little research and documentation has been published regarding his contact experiences, but I find him an intriguing and enigmatic figure in the early contactee scene. Much data on Carol Honey can be found in George Adamski. The Untold Story by Lou Zinstag and Timothy Good, 1983. But information on Honey's personal contacts with space people are a bit more difficult to trace. Bits or pieces of data are scattered in his publication Cosmic Science Newsletter, later changed to Science Publications Newsletter, SP Newsletter, published between 1962-1966. Timothy Good and Lou Zinstag met and interviewed Carol Honey on November 19, 1979. Timothy has kindly sent me a transcript of the interview. To my great surprise, they never asked about Honey's personal contacts but concentrated on his cooperation with George Adamski. On two separate occasions, in 1979 and 1986, I wrote letters to Carol Honey with the hope of receiving more data on his experiences, but he never answered. In a letter to Flying Saucer Review, March, April 1959, Carol Honey mentioned that his interest in UFOs began after observing a huge UFO flying behind an airliner. He moved to California and started investigating witnesses and contactees, but was disappointed when finding so many mystic channelers among the contactees. But things changed when he met Adamski. I visited George Adamski at his home in November of 1957. I fully expected to hear the same type of story as I had been hearing. Instead, I got a real surprise. Here was a story down to earth and not involving seances, trances and other such things as I had run into before. On a lecture tour with Adamski, Carol Honey had his first encounter with space people at a cafe in Oregon. Here are a few relevant quotes from various articles by Honey regarding his contacts. I worked with Mr. Adamski personally for almost 4 years before I had my first contact. It was entirely unexpected when it occurred. Mr. Adamski didn't know it occurred until some time afterward. Cosmic Science Newsletter, June 1962, 1. While it is possible that more than one group was here on Earth at the same time, those I worked with was comprised of only 6 individuals, each with a separate and distinct objective to accomplish. Certain United States leaders and scientists were working with them, and one of those who knew what was going on was President Kennedy. Those living among us were supplied with funds by Howard Hughes, and some of the reverse engineering was done at Hughes Aircraft Company. I personally had meetings with intelligence personnel of the United States who wanted certain information I had about the space people. Mrs. O'Leary's Cow, publication number 302, November 2003. pp. 4, 5, I was with Adamski when he had one of his contacts with ETs, to use the terms many use today, and my own meetings were with physical humanoid people who periodically visited our planet when it was necessary to complete an assignment or help fulfill whatever job they were assigned to do at the time. This is not a claim that I am the only one having a legitimate ET contact. I am merely the person chosen years ago to lead the group among us here today and supply answers to combat the false ideas that abound today. Most people in the group are proceeding quietly and unobserved in their efforts to continue the public education. Skeptical Analysis, publication number 293, August 2003, 10. Answer to a question from ufologist Lucius Farish, Some space people have scars from accidents, many do not. I have met one highly evolved space person who had a bad scar, so on this point I speak from personal experience. SP Newsletter, June 1963, 18. 6 months before Mr. Adamski turned over his work to me, I was told by the space people, during a face-to-face physical contact, that I had been chosen to succeed Mr. Adamski in his work. 6 months later I got the statement above from Mr. Adamski direct. Mr. Adamski was not present at that contact, or at any others. SP Newsletter, October 1963, 1. Like many of Adamski's co-workers, Carol Honey left the partnership in 1963 when Adamski's behavior and claims became increasingly irrational. Edith Nielsen, founder of the Swedish publishing company Parthenon in 1957, and publisher of Adamski's books, asked Carol Honey about his views and experiences in a letter February 10, 1968. Honey answered in a reply March 29, 1968, George Adamski went off the beam before he died and many statements he made has destroyed much of the good he did previously. I can only back up the information in his first three books and most of this I can't back up with physical evidence. I have had personal experiences myself which proved a lot of things to me, but I will not make them available to a skeptical public. Edith Nielsen. With only these sources and data, it is very difficult to estimate the reliability of Carol Honey's claims. He expressed a healthy skepticism when it comes to channeled information from space people and is well aware of the psychological interpretations of these experiences. Many of his articles are scientifically oriented and down-to-earth, unusual in the contactee field. But when it comes to articles on religion and philosophy, his lack of knowledge and scholarly erudition becomes obvious. There are some funny remarks on this issue in his newsletters. I have never read any books on philosophy, except Adamski's Cosmic Philosophy, so I am unfamiliar with the way others use certain terms. June 1962. Since the space people have evolved far past the philosophical flounderings of Earth, I feel it is unnecessary for me to waste time reading or studying the individual books here on Earth. July 1962. I find it odd that Carol Honey never found or studied the more intellectual works in the esoteric tradition, Blavatsky, Leadbeater, Sinnott, Bailey. Perhaps his experiences among the 1950s California channelers and mystics made him skeptical to all such claims. If he, like Desmond Leslie, had studied the more academic writings in esotericism, his perspective and knowledge would have been different. He could, as an example, have found his skeptical views on channeling confirmed and esoterically explained in telepathy by Alice Bailey. In this area he didn't follow his mentor, George Adamski, who was well informed on theosophy and the ancient wisdom. Carol Honey made a personal mix of metaphysical ideas combined with views from some psychics he supported, like Edgar Cayce. During the later of his life, Carol Honey wrote hundreds of articles on various subjects that he distributed free of charge to anyone interested. Some of these were published in Flying Saucers 50 years later, privately published in 2002. I have found very few of his articles on the internet, but one good example of Honey's ideas is Fraud in Metaphysics, Occultism and Mysticism. Another is UFOs, What They Are Not. Of interest is also an undated interview, Hunting the Truth. If Carol Honey really met some unknown individuals claiming to be space people, were they telling him the truth, or were space people a cover to hide their real identity? The Two Lives of George W. Van Tassel. One of the most well-known, first-generation American contactees of the 1950s was George W. Van Tassel, 1910-1978. He became something of the hub of the contactee movement, very much because of the popular giant rock spacecraft conventions arranged annually between 1954-1977. But also because of his claims of both personal and psychic contacts and cooperation with space people and his building the Integraton on his property at Yucca Valley, California. Messages received from the space people during his meetings at Giant Rock in the early 1950s were printed in his magazine Proceedings and also published in his first book I Rode a Flying Saucer, 1952. George Van Tassel began weekly meditation meetings at Giant Rock in 1949 with the usual attendance of 25 to 45 people. During these first meetings, he experienced entering an area of golden mist and heard a voice speaking. The words were taken down in shorthand or taped. Van Tassel was never able to find out the source of the voice, as it seems to come from all directions at once. Later, several of the messages were printed in Proceedings. Reading these messages from the golden density today reminds me of the writings of the classic Christian mystics, often beautiful and spiritually inspiring, but more like poems than factual information. Beginning in 1952, a totally new type of voices entered the scene. According to Van Tassel, these voices were from space people, using an instrument referred to as adiphone. They presented themselves with rather odd-sounding names like Hulda, Lata, Singba, Karul, Molkaok, eventually also Ashtar, who later became a popular space commandant among channelers all over the world. In May 1952, one of the space people referred to himself as Klaatu, Second Projection, Fourth Wave, Third Sector, Realms of Shkare. I don't know if Van Tassel ever noticed that in the classic sci-fi movie The Day the Earth Stood Still, released in September 1951, the spaceman was named Klaatu. An esoteric interpretation of such messages would be either a mixture of Van Tassel's own ideas from his subconscious or merry pranksters from the astral plane impersonating space people. Although most messages are uninteresting or meaningless, there are a few intriguing exceptions. On April 6, 1952, Nama communicated, "Your Pentagon will soon have much to muddle over. We are going to give this globe a buzz. I hope they do not intercept us from in front." I Rode a Flying Saucer, 2. Ed. 1953. p.20. Van Tassel gave this information to Air Force Intelligence Command in a letter answered July 22, 1952. On July 26, 27 and 28, 1952, the famous Washington saucer flap occurred. Coincidence? The life of George Van Tassel was forever changed on the night of August 24, 1953. While sleeping outdoors, he was awakened around 2 a.m. and found a man standing nearby. Beyond the man was a hovering scout ship of the same configuration as in the photographs of George Adamski. The man introduced himself, and Van Tassel would later refer to him by the alias Solgonda. Van Tassel was escorted to the craft, where he met three other men and was given information on various projects. The visit lasted around 20 minutes and then the craft took off. Before I continue, let me present a brief summary of the esoteric intervention theory as related to the experiences of George W. Van Tassel. I have advanced the theory that some of the physical contactees of the 1950s were involved in a cultural and psychological influence test. An experiment implemented by a group of benevolent alien visitors, Earth-based or extraterrestrial, a group with access to Vimana technology. This test was done in cooperation with the Higher Intelligence Agency, HIA, the custodians of the ancient wisdom, using a new type of phenomena as attraction, as they used spiritualist phenomena in connection with the founding of the Theosophical Society in 1875. Involved in this test was A.O. George Adamski, Orfeo Angelasi, Paul M. Vest, George Van Tassel, Daniel Fry and Howard Menger. After the contact of August 24, 1952, George Van Tassel was on several occasions visited by Solgonda and others belonging to his group. These visits were very physical, like ordinary meetings and conversations with anyone on Earth. But he wrote very little of these experiences, obviously trying to preserve the integrity and secrets of his visitor friends. There are a few references scattered in some issues of Proceedings. The individual Mr. Wheeler, also named Venuto, was one of the visitors belonging to this group. I personally talked with Venuto, who figured in the Los Angeles Times case, and who worked for Los Angeles County for several weeks. This Venusian, dubbed Venuto by the reporters in the case, visited us here several months after he disappeared from his job in Los Angeles. This visit was in the presence of 23 witnesses. Proceedings, Volume 4, Number 4, July 1956, p. 6. In another article, George Van Tassel also mentioned that Mr. Wheeler, when visiting Giant Rock, demonstrated a technical device that made him invisible. The man didn't dematerialize.